legendary stunt pilot Corky Fornoff's big break in the movies. Got time for some cool stories? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. You may have heard of Corky Fornoff. If you're a movie buff, you've certainly seen him fly. Corky's flown some of the most memorable aviation stunts in dozens of films over the years. Today, we'll hear excerpts from his recent appearance on Aero TV. How does one get started in stunt flying?
Well, I was actually born into it. My name, Corky, comes from the cowling of an F4U Corsair that my dad was assigned to at the end of the Second World War. And on the side of it was written Corky. And he didn't know what it was, but he liked it, so he called me Corky. 30 years later, when I was doing a commercial for Toshiba, they paid me to use my name besides flying the stunts for the commercial. And it turns out that there is a level in the samurai culture called Corky. And when you reach the level of Corky, you're a favored son of the gods and not to be compromised. And that's where the name comes from. I was actually in my mother's belly and flying in a PT-19. I don't remember that. But I grew up in it. We always had airplanes around and World War II fighters and trainers. And that's how I got into it. I would travel a lot of times riding in the back of Bob Hoover's Mustang and cleaning his airplane and my father's Bearcat. So I was around it during the summer when I wasn't in school, cleaning airplanes. We were close friends with Paul Mance and Frank Talman, who were doing this the movie stuff in Hollywood. And about 1967, we were in Long Island, and they needed a camera plane. And so we used my P-51 Mustang. And then they had me do some stunts for them with the Mustang. And it kind of grew from there. Once you do a major film and they like your work, word travels from director to producer. And all of a sudden, I started getting calls. And so I was still flying air shows on the weekends and making movies during the week. Every movie is like its own child. So everyone is different. There are tremendous stories on all of them. From the Bond movies, I've done 4 James Bond movies. And I'm kind of known in the industry for creating the stunts. A director will work with me when the script first is developed and say, this is an idea we have. We need an aviation stunt here. What would you do? How would you put this stunt together? So I will go ahead and create a scene for it and then fly it. Some of them you think you should have waited before you spoke, like flying through the hangar. They said, gee, what can we do? Bond's got a missile chasing him in this little jet. And I said, well, simple. We'll go fly through a hangar, and then the missile will lock onto one of the airplanes in the hangar. And when it was all over, I walked out of the meeting and said, damn, I'm going to go fly through a hangar. So it was, you got to watch out what you say. That's as much fun as actually flying them, because you're working directly with the director and the writers. For example, in the Bond movie License to Kill, we had a situation where they were actually stumped. Bond was underwater. He was about to be captured. And they had all of these pontoon boats on top of the water. And they said, how are we going to get Bond out of here? Well, I had a seaplane in that scene already. He was the one that flew in and brought the cocaine in. And I said, from the bottom underwater, if you look up a seaplane, just like the one next to us here, it's going to look like a pontoon boat. I said, Bond's underwater. He fires his spear gun into the float, and it pulls him up out of the water. He thinks he's got a boat that's going to pull him away from danger. But when he breaks the water, he's behind a seaplane that's taking off. So they love that. And they said, well, how are we going to get him onto the airplane? I said, simple. When I was in high school, we used to take our girlfriends out in a seaplane and go water skiing behind it. I said, so we can do that very easily and get him on board the airplane. So they love the idea, and that's how that scene was created. You had one in John Travolta's Face Off. We had a problem. They wanted me to make a 90-degree turn with a Lockheed Jetstar, which is a 4-engine executive jet. And it's kind of hard to make a turn at 60 miles an hour in one of those airplanes. So I sat and thought about it, and I actually rigged the airplane up like a sidecar. I filled the right wing full of fuel, and I adjusted the strut so that the airplane was balanced. And then we actually screwed through the rim of the tire, through the rim of the wheel into the tire like we used to do in my hot rod days. So we were sure that the rims would stay on and it wouldn't roll off the rims. The tires wouldn't roll off. And it worked. And that was quite a thrill, going around a corner at 60 miles an hour in a Jetstar. And then we had to crash into a hangar. with it. So that one was pretty sophisticated. One of the problems I had was I would go out and drive at this hangar at 60 miles an hour, and just to get a picture of the hangar door coming at me, and I would go right next to the edge of the building. And I said, oh, this is doable, this will work. And when it came the day to shoot, it was a John Woo movie, he was a director, and we had more cameras on that scene than any other film was ever used, even to date. We had 26 cameras, and because it was a one-shot deal. I had three cameras on the airplane, so as I got the airplane rolling and got it up to speed, I had to turn on the three cameras, keep the airplane in a straight line, and concentrate on hitting my mark. And when I was about 200 feet out, going 60 miles an hour, and there was no turning back, I was committed, and concentrating on my spot on the hangar door, I literally thought to myself, Warnoff, what in the hell are you doing here? But it punched through rather nicely. It's really very precise work. Everything is figured out mathematically. You have to know exactly what's going to happen. You put it together that way. It's not one of those things where you say, here, hold my beer and watch this. You know, it doesn't happen like that. And I have a yellow streak up my back that gets so wide I can wrap it around and make a raincoat out of it. That kind of keeps me alive. But everything has to be done. You know, you figure it out mathematically, even how you're going to stop the airplane when I went through the hangar. Things of that nature. It's the creativity of it, the adventure.
We'll be back in a moment for more with Corky Fornoff. I'm Paul Plack, and this is a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. Today we're listening to stories from stunt pilot Corky Fornoff. He's been working in movies for years, so what prompted the transition into becoming the demo pilot for the Lopresti Fury?
It's a funny thing. I had this little voice in my head that kept calling me and saying, call Kurt Lopresti, call Kurt Lopresti. And I was at a point to where, the film industry has allowed me to fly on every continent of the world and fly aerobatics and do stunts, all except Antarctica. And I didn't lose anything there, so I'm not going there. And had the opportunity to fly almost 300 different airplanes. But they had started going to a lot of CGI, and they still needed me in my capacity to create these scenes and to get the airplanes there that the actors could act around. But they had taken the fun out of it for me from the standpoint of the flying. So I wanted to do a little more flying. And I called Kurt. I listened to that little voice. And Kurt was really excited because he was about to call me and said, you know, we wanted to talk to you about stepping back from the film industry a little bit. And coming and flying the Fury and demonstrating it for us. So I went down to Vero Beach and got in the airplane and went out. And I was out over the beach, and it wasn't 5 minutes, and I felt at home in the airplane, and I started flying my old Mustang routine in the along the beach in the Fury. And I found myself laughing, just literally laughing out loud. It was so much fun. So I came back and landed, and I had a smile on my face like the first time I ever kissed a girl in the back seat of a car. You know, I couldn't get the smile off. It was almost like, is this legal? Can I do it again? What if somebody sees me? So we went in and we made a deal, and I could still do the movies, and I still break down scripts and do a lot of stuff for TV and the films, but I'm very selective in what I do now. And a lot of jobs I've given away to friends. And we made the deal. The airplane stays with me, and I fly it around for them. And I also help in a capacity as an advisor in other areas of the company. Roy Lopresti wanted three things in the airplane. He wanted to be able to fly like a P-51 Mustang. He wanted the airplane to have the capacity to carry two sets of golf clubs and four suitcases. And he wanted it to be able to go roughly 200 knots on 10 gallons an hour. And he hit the mark. It is one of the sweetest flying airplanes I've ever flown. Out of all the airplanes I've ever flown, it ranks right there with the Bearcat and the Mustang and my little BD-5 jet. It is that exciting. It's like a very fine lady. Right now we're getting ready to, we will start building the conformity airplanes. And the conformity airplanes are airplanes that are built to conform to the plans we've given the FAA. So, you know, every little part is stamped and registered. And when the FAA is happy that, yeah, you built this airplane according to the plans, it all matches, so you meet conformity, that's the next step in the certification process. And then the airplane will be certified in the aerobatic category. It's really, any pilot you talk to, that's what they want. An airplane they can fly like a fighter, go cross country fast and comfortable. And we have a lot of neat innovations. I came up with the camera system for the airplane. You know, it's in the wingtip, and it originally was developed to taxi, so you could see ahead of you taxiing. But we found out that it's got a lot of advantages, and that is that it clears you under the nose climbing out or letting down. And it also knocks out about 50% of the haze when you're going into a hazy area. The filter in the camera does that. The other thing is the iPod system, which RJ developed, and you'll be talking with RJ later. But it is a very unique system because besides the music, I have to have my tunes going cross country. Besides the music, it records all the data from the engine of the airplane and the airframe and the navigation system. And you can also record from my camera system. So when you go up and you shoot your buddy down and he doesn't believe you, pop your iPod out and send him a clip.
So after years of flying in movies, are there any Hollywood projects Corky still finds interesting?
I've broken down several scripts in the last 2 years that I will do and want to do that are very interesting. One of them is called West in the Night, about a woman pilot back in the 30s flying out of Africa. It's a very good story. And then there's Joe Merchant's, Jimmy Buffett's book, Where's Joe Merchant? I'd like to do that one. And the other one is a very well-written script. It's almost like an Indiana Jones type of movie about the Flying Tigers. Those are the three I'm looking at that I would like to do. My grandfather always told me to go for the adventure and the money would come, and that's been true. The Lopresti family is very close-knit, and it's the kind of atmosphere I like working with. It's exactly like working on an A-list movie, where everybody covers what they have to cover in their department, and they cover each other. You know, you don't stand around and say, well, that's not my job. It's, what can I do to help? What can we get, what can we do to get it completed? And as a director of flight operations, it's a joy working with them and ramrodding the certification process and the flight test and those things. Go for the adventure. Enjoy life. If you can't have fun, don't do it.
You can watch this interview in video form, including some great clips from some of the films mentioned, in the archives for the week of December 22nd, 2008, at www.aero-tv.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.